Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a five-star review. Come visit me on HighTruths.com to learn more about the show or download a free prescription for naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Today's episode is sponsored by Families Against Fentanyl. FAF is an organization set on attacking the supply chain of deadly illicit fentanyl. To learn more, visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign their petition to declare illicit fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a compassionate conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. Compassion, as in caring with your heart for other people. I see the word compassion used for completely opposite ideologies when it comes to drugs. There are those who justify drug trafficking because that person has an addiction and needs to support their habit. They have a brain disorder, so what else are they supposed to do? There are those who, in the name of compassion, say it's okay to steal if you're homeless or have an addiction. Again, they have no income, so they have to steal to survive. In the name of compassion, I've heard people say that it's okay to assault a doctor or a healthcare worker if you have an addiction or mental health problem. The assailant has a medical issue, and so they should be excused for the violence. I disagree with that point of view. I don't think enabling or justifying drug use, theft, or violence is compassionate. A red line is crossed once you infringe on another person by trafficking drugs, stealing, or violence. Compassion that avoids consequences for committing a crime is not compassion. It's cruel, very cruel. It's cruel to both parties, the victim and the perpetrator. I have compassion and empathy for people who suffer from substance use disorder and are homeless. They don't enjoy their predicament. That's why I want solutions for their condition, not excuses. We need more drug courts, more treatment options, and more deterrence. I spoke to countless people who have said that going to jail was their turning point in getting off the streets and getting into recovery. There's a cliche that says that we won't arrest our way out of the drug problem, but that's just a cliche. It's also a cliche to say we won't naloxone our way out of the problem or buprenorphine our way out of the problem. We don't want people simply who possess drugs to go to jail, but we also don't want what we have right now in California, which is open public drug use, free drug trade, and a record number of people dying from fentanyl. California will have a ballot initiative in November that will aim at reversing that trend, the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. To learn more about compassion and deterrence and discuss the ballot initiative, I reach out to Darren White. Darren White is founder of Realize Potential Incorporated. RPI is a nonprofit working on making a positive impact on the community by helping at-risk youth and young adults making choices that improve their quality of life. Darren has expertise as a life coach, prevention strategist in national anger management, restorative justice, father engagement, and he has received several awards for his distinguished community service. To learn more about Darren White, Realize Potential, and the California Ballot Initiative on Theft, Drugs, and Homelessness, check out High Truth show notes. Darren White, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor and privilege to be here.
I've been waiting for this conversation for a while, actually since February. That's when I first met you. We were together on a press conference on the Homeless, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. And I don't know, you stood out in what you had to say. And I thought, I want an excuse to talk to this man again.
You don't need an excuse. You got my number now, so you can have my email. You can reach out.
That's right. And you do a lot of interesting things. First of all, tell us what brought you to that press conference where we met.
First of all, I am on the executive board of the Oakland branch NAACP, and I'm the juvenile justice and social justice chair for our branch in Oakland, California. So I was asked to attend by Madam President Cynthia Adams. So that's how I was on the Zoom meeting.
Right. That's great. And so you do a lot of work on the issue of drugs, homelessness, and help people in Oakland or other places too?
Mainly Oakland, but Bay Area. Like right now, I'm working in San Francisco.
Right. So what is going on in the Bay Area when it comes to the issue of drugs and homelessness?
It's overwhelming what's going on here in Oakland and in the Bay Area. We have a lot of people who are unhoused. We have a lot of people that are have substance use issues, which is also contributing to them being unhoused. And with the crime that's going around in the Bay Area, these factors are affecting, you know, everyone's lives. And us at the NAACP, we're doing our best to collaborate with other organizations to get out there, boots on the ground, to do what we can to help anyone that needs the help and anyone that we can possibly help.
Right. And so your background is like Realize Potential. What do you do with Realize Potential?
So I'm the founder and executive director of Realize Potential. We work with fathers to engage fathers to for them to be better fathers, to make better families, to help make better communities. We also work with young men to deter them from getting involved in criminal behavior, anti-sex trafficking. We do job development. We also do some work around COVID, and we work with young men to deal with some of their past trauma to get them to a point where they can understand it, address it, and, you know, live productive and healthy lives.
That's so important. And I think it's focusing on men also is important. I think that if we look at where drugs start, it's like for cannabis use disorder, it's really a male-dominant disease. Not all drugs. Drugs affect both sexes, but there's some things that are really focused on men. And are you involved in just the African-American community, the people of color are specifically hit more with the fentanyl epidemic and deaths? Teenage young black men have died more and are disproportionately affected by drugs. Is that a specific area that you're reaching out to, that underserved?
We do work with young men that are, I wouldn't say they're addicted, but they have a high use of recreational drugs, right? And they're doing a lot of numbing from what they're going through in their lives right now with marijuana, ecstasy, heroin, you name it, you know, vaping, whatever they're using right now to cope. Is when we see a young person that is dealing with that. I have colleagues that specifically work with people who have substance use, and I refer them to a warm handoff so we can get those young people the help and treatment that they need.
Right. And that's how you're talking about they're realizing the potential.
Exactly.
Do you also do primary prevention, like reaching out to young kids that don't use drugs to teach them how to protect their brains and to realize their potential before there's a problem, or only you catch the high risk people?
No, we outreach. We do workshops all the time for preventative, and we want to make sure that we prevent kids getting involved in drugs, crime, and things like that. And then if we, you know, find out they are, we have resources for everyone that comes in. So what's really going on here in the Bay Area with a lot of young people? And this, and I'm going to say this, this is, when I say young people, I mean boys, girls, young men, young women, is that, you know, we're in California and they, you know, they legalized marijuana, right? And kids now just look at me and I say, you know, I pull them aside. I don't like to embarrass anyone that comes into my workshops, right? I'll say, hey, young man, you know, you're a little loud today. And that's a term that they call weed, loud, because it smells so loud, right? Uh-huh. Smell it. Yes.
I learned something new. You're loud.
You're a little loud today, young man.
Do that. I come in the ER and I'm like, whoa. Like, do you even know?
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean, right? Okay. And they'll say, like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. White. But the kids, the first thing they'll say is, well, it's legal, you know? And so if they're under 18, you know, I really can have some words with them. But, you know, they're 18 and over. They're like, you know, we can smoke weed. It's legal. And so that's a big issue here in the Bay Area, that a lot of young adults smoke a lot of weed out here.
So what's your comeback when it's like, hey, it's legal? What do you say?
But is it healthy for you? Is it good for your production? Right? How are you functioning? You know, when you're high. I just had a conversation in a group today's Friday. On Wednesday, I had a young man I was asking him some questions. We were dialoguing and he couldn't remember anything. And I asked him, do you smoke, you know, a lot of weed? He said, yeah. I said, stop, because it's affecting you. And, you know, he laughed, I laughed, you know. So I use a lot of humor when I work with young people, or people, period, because it breaks the ice, you know. It lets down people's guards when they see that you're not so serious. But I'm trying to give them information that they can utilize that can help themselves, because, you know, I don't utilize abstinence. I utilize harm reduction, because once some people start doing some things, they're going to continue doing them unless something tragic happens to them, or they get some information that they can really understand why they should change the behaviors that they're doing. And it's like one term that I use is like, if you're sexually active, always use a condom, right? That's safer sex, right? Because once most people start having sex, they 9 times of 10, they're going to continue having it, but try to have safer sex. So I use the harm reduction method when I work with people.
Yeah. Although I've learned that there's a biological need to have sex, right? Like all animals do it, and we're humans, we're part of that. There's a, you know, reproductive need and a drive. There is not an innate need for using drugs. So it's different in that sense, right?
Yes, yes, it is. And that's why it, for harm reduction is, oh, you want to smoke weed? So make sure you roll your own blunts, right? Don't smoke after anyone else. That's harm reduction, right? Because you don't know what somebody's passing you in that. If you didn't see them roll it, you didn't roll it yourself, you don't know what's in that blunt or in that joint. And you're sharing it. And COVID is going around. COVID is not gone, right? I have to explain to some of the youth that you guys are sharing, you know, blunts. You guys are passing around the COVID or whoever else they were kissing on or being with last night.
Well, I'd be more worried about like hepatitis or HIV or something like that, even more than COVID.
That as well. You know, a lot of my people that I work with are, you know, 18 to 25 age, right? So it's a lot of, you know, marijuana use and partying and stuff like that. So we have conversations, and whenever they come up, I have, you know, information for them. And you know, I don't force anything on anyone. I just give them information. If they can utilize it, great. If not, at least they heard some positive information from correct information and not information from their peers that don't know what they're really talking about.
Right. I'm intrigued about what you do with anger management. Do you see that? Do you how do you manage that? And by the way, there is an association with cannabis and violence. So because we were just talking about marijuana. But do you see that connection? And how do you is that a special focus? Do you see people who've had anger management problems and then they come to you for how do you deal with that?
I am a national certified anger management facilitator. I see individual clients. I do group anger management. Matter of fact, right now I'm here at Treasure Island, Treasure Island One, doing a life skills and anger management course for their construction program. So I have individual clients that are dealing with things that that have triggered their anger and put them in a alternative situation where they were having to seek out anger management workshops so they can continue to either work at their location, or one of my clients has to go through these workshops to continue living where he's living due to an incident. So,
Do you see that the association with drugs and anger, like, do you tell your clients, you know, whatever to doing dealing with emotionally, but also, like, I guess I would recommend, like, why don't you try to give your brain a cleanse and see if that helps you out, which is a lot easier said than done if you have an addiction.
Right. Right.
But that could help the anger.
I see more angry drunk people. And I've had worked with more people who get angry once they're drinking than when they're high off marijuana, right? And those are the two substances that the people that I work with or come across most are dealing with. It's either marijuana or alcohol.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an association. Well, that's very interesting and important. So that brings, and that just shows the compassion in you. I think that that's why when you said that people listen to you because you're making a joke or and you relate to people, that comes from the compassion. The act that we were talking about, the Homeless Drug Addiction and Theft Reduction Act, I don't know if you want to give us a little brief about what is that about. I think it's compassion and deterrence as well.
It is definitely compassion and it's definitely deterrence. So that was February we had our last meeting. So basically it was about people who have a substance use issue, instead of arresting them and sending them to jail, it was kind of like a three strike system, right? And once they have, matter of fact, it was about the petty theft that was going on from the stores, that if they had a third strike, they would be sent to treatment. And if they didn't have a successful completion of treatment, then they had the possibility to be incarcerated. But the first time they got caught stealing under a certain amount, they would be basically cited and released. The same thing for the second time. But the third time, they would be mandated to treatment. And on successful completion of the treatment, they would not be charged. But if they did not successfully complete their treatment, they would be charged and sent to, I believe, our county jail is Santa Rita. So it would be for misdemeanors, yes.
So I think that's, again, it's compassion because it brings back drug courts to California, which we got rid of with Prop 47.
Right.
There was no incentives. Like you can, you know, have these could possess drugs, traffic drugs, steal with no consequences, right? You could have, I think the one story that someone said at the press conference, you can steal up to $950 at a time and it's a misdemeanor. Basically, you could get away with $950, but you could do it 30 times. And it, so what this law does, it makes it cumulative. It's like, okay, if you have a total of $950 different times, then it's a problem. And right, and it's a three strikes, you're out, not you're out and going to jail, three strikes, and now you have mandated mental health and addiction treatment. That's very compassionate. And it provides deterrence, because if you don't have deterrence, then what happens? What do you see with the lack of deterrence in Northern California?
With nothing to deter them from doing it, we were seeing a lot of these crimes over and over and over again, and it has affected the businesses in downtown Oakland and just in the Bay Area and statewide. To be honest with you, last night there are some other local restaurants and businesses that are closing due to the accumulative effect of this continued petty theft that they were getting away with. So I hope that this is going to, really deter them from the people that are doing these crimes, and also getting them help, because, I don't support mass incarceration, not at all. As an African-American male, right, I do not support mass incarceration, but I do support getting people the help they need, and I also support, consequences for, your behaviors and actions.
Right. And having consequences is compassionate. Right? That's how you get people to realize their potential by,
Right. Got to realize their potential. Everybody has greatness in them. They have to realize it, identify it, and then utilize it. Because once you realize your potential and your greatness, you'll walk with your head high. You'll conduct yourself in a different way. And you're on a path that no one can take you off of once you realize the greatness in you.
So NAACP supports this this initiative. Is that right?
They had me attend. They're willing to see how this goes. I cannot say that we are as a
as an organization,
Oakland branch, or as the national branch supporting this. That has to come from someone higher up than me, but they're very interested in how that this program can help reduce the crime here in Oakland and around the Bay Area and nationally. But one thing that I can say that our Oakland branch supports is public safety. We're all about public safety. Everyone in the city of Oakland should be able to feel safe, go out shopping, go buy gas, and go out to the community and feel safe.
Wow, that's so important to hear. And this initiative for California, it repeals Prop 47 that allows, for you to steal things $950 at a time with no end, these smash and grabs that are really destroying businesses. I think that's why there's over 2,000 supporters that signed up for this initiative. It increases consequences for drug trafficking, especially if you're dealing fentanyl with a firearm. I think, that does that. And you're showing that this is bipartisan support, right? This is not a Democrat, we have a very divided California, but this is not an issue that brings division, right? This unites us.
Yes. We have a very divided nation at this time. So anything that can bring, us together, this is a bipartisan issue. And anything that can bring us together is great. Because when you really get down where the rubber meets the road, we have more in common that we don't have in common. And at this time in the nation, we should be coming together. And for myself, this is my I statement and my statement for Realized Potential. You know, we have to lead with love, right? We have to lead with love, right? Love and caring can conquer all. And that's how I facilitate. That's how my agency runs. And that's how I live my life. The glass is always half full.
Aw, that's wonderful. I love that. Leading with love. I'll do that. Yeah. but there, you know, the news has kind of sprung up with this ballot initiative. I don't know if there's like funny business going on. They've collected over 900,000 signatures qualifying, so it will be on the ballot. But I saw some headlines about a poison pill in the legislative crime and urging the attorney general to prioritize public safety over politics. I don't know if you know what that's about. I was trying to figure out what kind of shenanigans are happening because I guess there's some pushback on this bipartisan initiative.
You know, I can't comment on that because I haven't heard that piece just until now. So I really don't know. You know, there's always going to be someone that doesn't want, you know, to unite people, you know. We have to, like I said, we have to combat that by with love and just trying to be the best we all can be, and not let the naysayers stop us from trying to do what we can do for all of us.
Wow, that's beautiful. I agree with you. It seems like in today's probably media environment, the extremes make all the noise and get all the media, but most of us human citizens are in the middle, right? And our voice doesn't get heard as much, but we, you know, we we're the majority.
Yes, we have to, you know, we have to use platforms like this to be heard and be seen and to let people know that, you know, we're all not trying to be divisive, and pick a side. I'm picking what's best for all, right? We all share this planet. We all breathe the air. We all need this earth to be as best as it can. You know, we're dealing with global warming and all other things, but you know, we all need to share this planet and this space and be caring to one another.
I agree. So I think what I was trying to figure out what this poison pill was in the headlines, and I think it's that the ballot initiative has made it. We got enough signatures, and now it's up to the attorney general on how they write the summary and the title, and they may be trying to influence by changing that, and they've been caught doing that and told, you know, to not do it or at least show that, because we want this ballot initiative to pass.
Yes, I'm not familiar. I haven't heard anything about that, but hopefully, you know, whoever's the watchdog on that caught it and making it fair for everyone. You know, sometimes I don't like to use that word fair, because a fair is a place you can, life's not fair. Fair is a place you can ride rides and buy cotton candy.
Yeah. Yeah. Life's not fair. You're right.
You know, just, you know, just try to do the best for everyone. Yeah. Don't just be one side or the other.
I like that. And I think this is a great, I love this initiative because it brings Californians together. I mean, since when did we have such great bipartisan support trying to make California better for addiction, for mental health, for homelessness? And it's a matter of compassion and deterrence. Having deterrence is compassionate, right?
Yes. Because we don't want to lock everybody up. You know, that's a drain on the money for the correctional system and taxpayers. We, you know, lot of people just need help, you know, with the cost of living in California, especially in the Bay Area. You know, people need help. People need services and programs that they can utilize and get involved with to help them, you know, do the best they can and realize their full potential.
Yeah, and realize their full potential. I think the red line is when you're now hurting somebody else, right? If you're angry, you could be angry. But now if you're angry and you hurt someone else physically, now that you've crossed the red line. If you're using drugs, you know, you're hurting yourself. But now if you're dealing and someone else dies, then right. Now you've hurt someone else. If you're stealing, you're hurting other people, right? All of us with the increased cost of things. So I think that's where I kind of draw my red line, if you agree with that.
You know what? Here's the thing about anger. Anger is a normal, everyday emotion, right? There's nothing wrong with getting angry. What happens is what you do when you get angry. If you're abusive, if you're verbally abusive, physically abusive, damaging property, being aggressive, that's when anger is the main issue. And if you're out here selling drugs, if you're causing violence, being physically a danger to other people, there's a line that shouldn't be crossed. And then some major interventions need to happen and consequences.
Yeah. So I want to offer something to you, just because I was thinking about the population, if it interests you. I'm part of an organization called ISAC, the International Academy on Science and Impact of Cannabis. And I know it seems, you know, it's legal, everybody seems to be doing it, but yet it's destroying young minds and losing potential. And so we have a website, we give lectures, I do a lecture about what we see in the emergency department, but not a day goes by on a shift in the emergency department that I don't take care of somebody with marijuana poisoning, with cannabis poisoning. They either have cannabis hyperemesis syndrome, or they're throwing up and scromiting from it, or they're in there with psychosis. And now large studies, like with 7 million people in Denmark, or, you know, 11,000 people in cannabis, show that cannabis use at a young age, age 12 to 19, increases your likelihood of having mental health issues, psychosis, 5 to 11 times more. So again, it's not about judging people, it's about protecting people's brains and letting them know, because the industry doesn't want you to know this stuff, right? Just like the tobacco industry didn't want you to know that it hurts your lungs. It's like, what are you talking about? Everybody smokes. Your lungs are black. That's not from that. It's just because of the pollution. That's where we're at with cannabis. Like, everybody's doing it. What are you talking about? I use it all the time. It's not a problem. But
I would love some more information on that. And I can get involved, because, like I said, I work with a lot of young adults. They need to understand that their brains are still forming up to the age of 25. And you putting in, you know, these harmful, that cannabis at when your brain is still, you know, formulating and growing, it's not going to be very conducive for your success and your potential. So, if you're an adult and you're making that decision to smoke, fine. You're an adult, right? But youth, we need to get the word out to youth that, you know, you shouldn't be smoking, and especially not at an early age. But on the other hand, I will say this. My mother, you know, rest her soul, she hurt her back when I was in high school in the 80s. And that was before arthroscopic surgery. So they had to cut her whole back open, basically fillet her back and go in there and do her disc. And as she got older, she had a lot of back pain, and she was on a lot of opioids. And I saw the medicinal side of marijuana that helped my mother stay off of a lot of the opioids she was taking partaking in marijuana. Now, my mother was in her, you know, 60s. And late 70s. So she was an adult and can make that decision for herself. So I've been told and talked to a lot of people about the medicinal side of marijuana, but I am more concerned about our youth smoking weed at an early age, when their brains are still developing and they're, you know, they're out making poor decisions because they're high. So yeah. I'm definitely interested in being a part of that to advocate to young people to think about not partaking in marijuana at an early age.
Right. And it comes to the fentanyl issue. I didn't even think that I'd be talking to you about weed. That was not my intention. It just kind of happened. Okay. I really wanted to focus on fentanyl. But I could tell you that, and I bet you see this too, if you see people who've overdosed on fentanyl and came to talk about it, if you ask them what's the first drug they ever used at a young age, it's always marijuana.
You know, it's always marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, this fentanyl issue, it's a terrible thing. I lost one of my best friends from high school. I've known his mother since elementary school. His father, I've known since the 10th grade. We were teammates. We played football together. They lost their son a few years ago to a fentanyl overdose. And it's been on my mind ever since, you know, to see two parents that I've known, you know, so long lose their child to fentanyl has really put it on the radar for me, and it's a terrible thing. And there's a commercial out right now that I, you know, I've been seeing the last few days, and it really stuck out to me when I saw it last night. There's a young man on the commercial that says, you know, there's a lot of fake pills out there right now. And you can die. This might be the first time you're trying ecstasy or going to one of those pill parties and you get the wrong thing and you're dead, you know? So it needs to be addressed, and it's just a terrible thing. Anytime there's lives being lost, you know, from drugs, violence, you know, it's just a terrible thing.
No, it is. I mean, there's a population that have a substance use disorder and they're dying from fentanyl. But there's a whole group of people, and we haven't even accounted like what percentage of them, that they just made a mistake. They don't even have mm-hmm. an addiction. They made a mistake. They took a pill. They were anxious. Yeah. They were whatever. They made a mistake, and it cost them their lives. And that's just not okay. The other day, law enforcement showed me this white pill that says Tums on it. That was special. Damn. Can you believe that? There's a special place. That's what deterrence is, right? Wow. That is not okay.
Wow.
Not okay.
Not at all.
Yeah. Right. So I do support an organization called Families Against Fentanyl, and really trying to get at the supply side upstream and declaring fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Like, we are being attacked and too many people are dying, 300 a day from fentanyl. It's inexcusable.
Yes, it is. And send me that information as well. I'm always interested in getting involved in something that's positive and that's going to help people.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. Darren, what should we say? What take-home points? I'd love to hear your, like, anger tips. Tell me what to do not to be angry.
find your anger cues. Figure out what sets you off. Once you recognize what how your body is changing when you get upset or things that upset you, once you can recognize it, you can utilize those skills to de-escalate yourself. And, you know, just try to not let people push your buttons. You know, they always say, oh, they push my button. You know, if you didn't have a button to push, they wouldn't be able to push that button. So try not to create a button. You know, and just utilize some self-care. Always utilize some self-care, but mainly knowing that anger is a normal everyday emotion. There's nothing wrong with being angry, but what you do when you're angry, like I said, if you can become verbally abusive, physically abusive, that's the issue with anger. But try to just be on an even keel to maintain a mellow place and not let yourself get too anxious, too high or too low. Just keep it mellow.
Right. Count to 10 and watch the, yes. And act the, do you like the movie Anger Management? That's a great movie.
Yeah, that's a funny movie.
That's good.
Realizing your potential. What's your tips? Final tips for realizing your potential.
Everyone has greatness in them, right? And it's up to you to realize your full potential and reach that greatness and just lead with love, you know? And you have to love yourself. It's called self-esteem. It's called self-care, right? If you don't love yourself first, how is anyone else going to love you? So be selfish about loving yourself and so you can reach your full potential. And the world is your oyster once you realize that you can achieve what you want to achieve as long as you put your mind to it.
Isn't that harder said than done to love yourself? Some people don't like themselves.
You know what? You know what? Here's another I statement. Okay. No, because I love me, right? So, and that's why I try to get people to understand you are special. There's, I believe the world's population is about 7 billion. It's about that. Guess what? There's only one you. Out of 7 billion people on this earth, this world, there's only one you. So you know how special you are? So you got to love yourself. You have to think about, wow, you know, out of all these people on earth, in the world, there's only one me. So I've got to love myself. No one's perfect. I'm not perfect, right? I've got flaws. I don't have any hair anymore. I'm in shape. Yeah, my shape is round, right? You know, I am not perfect, but you know, you have to love your imperfections, right? And love yourself.
That's great. Well, Darren White, you are special. And when you love yourself, it's infectious. It makes other people love you too. And you've realized your potential, and may you continue to have more potential like that. And really bless you for all the great work you do in helping others do the same.
Well, thank you. I have to say, I get it from my parents. I'm Eddie and Maxine's son. And I grew up in a house full of love, right? My parents told us that they loved us, and I just, you know, I'm giving it back.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to FAF, Families Against Fentanyl. Visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org to learn more. High Truths producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.